Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
All right. Welcome back to Peak Speak. I'm Thomas Lilly. Joining me as always is John Sheridan. And for our first interview today, we have the illustrious Nathan Jones.
Hey guys. Illustrious.
Yes. Illustrious, yes. Yeah. Often referred to as Mr. Perfect by one person.
Yeah. Marcus.
Yeah. To me, it's the cool sock guy.
Cool sock guy. Yeah. I think I like that better than Mr. Perfect. Because I'm far from perfect these days. But I don't think I've had a perfect comp in
sometime.
A long time. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Nothing wrong with that. So why don't we get started by just maybe telling everyone a little bit about...
Because some of our many millions of viewers that we have for the podcast we haven't actually released yet may not know who you are. You are a relatively faceless man in powerlifting in some ways, purely because you don't engage in the shit-flinging that is social media.
Yeah.
And thus, I think a lot of people may have never heard of you before. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Who are you? How'd you get into lifting? What brought you here?
Okay, so Nathan Jones. I guess what got me into lifting was I'd taken about 12 to 18 months off going to the gym when I was in my late 20s. So I had no reason to go.
Sorry, if you're now in your early 50s.
No, I'm 40 next year. So 40 in February. And I was just looking for a purpose to go back to the gym, and just going and doing the normal bodybuilding style stuff didn't really interest me anymore, because I wasn't going to compete in bodybuilding. I just was going there like every average Joe, throwing the weights around, not getting stronger, not getting bigger, just wasting my money essentially. And then I read a book by Stuart McRoberts called Beyond Brawn, which basically showed me that you didn't need to do all these accessory exercises to improve strength or size, you just needed to stick to the basics. So I did that for probably about 12 months, and then again was losing a bit of focus. What am I doing here, blah blah blah. And I was on a forum one day, ran into a guy with the handle of Park Monster, which turns out was Dave Park.
Oh yeah,
everyone knows Dave Park.
Yeah.
And he said, have you ever heard of powerlifting? I said, well, what the fuck is powerlifting? And he said,
people still ask me that all the time.
Yeah, a lot of people, oh, is it that Olympic stuff?
Like, yeah, I literally answered that question yesterday.
Yeah, yeah, well, it was kind of like that, but not really.
Yeah.
And
like that, but not at all like that.
Yeah, he explained to me what it was, and I thought, yeah, that sounds cool. And I said, so how do I train for that? And he said, oh, Shaco. I said, what the fuck is a Shaco? And he sort of said, okay, go away and read this, which is another reference, online reference that I had a look at, and it was basically Shaco number 29 and 27, and yeah, the rest is history, I guess. Entered my first comp in 2008, which was Battle of the Gyms.
That was my first comp too, but yeah, in 2010.
I see, been here longer than you. Yeah, so I did okay there, and then the rest is history, yeah.
So, since then, give us a little bit of an overview of your best lifting achievements.
Oh, look, best lifting achievements, I think, was getting 2,000 pound total at Pro Rule 7.
Which, for those of you that are not imperially minded and working kilos like normal people, is
907.5 kilos. Yeah.
Okay. What did that consist of? What was the breakdown on that?
Now. So it's that three. Yeah, it is 370 squats. 207.5 bench, and the rest in deadlift.
And that, no one cares about the actual number, just the rest. Yeah. That at the time was the greatest 110 kilo total.
Yeah, that's right.
In Australia, which beat Ricky Goodyear's 900.
No, mine.
Your own.
Yeah.
Your own 900.
No, 902.
Oh, no, two. That's
902
right.
902.5 here, which is done at 2014 Worlds. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Which we'll talk about later when we get that competition.
Definitely. Yeah.
I guess another lifting achievement was when my first 350 squat raw, first 200 bench, competition wise, you know, every comp has been an achievement just getting through it, you know.
Yep.
Lifting against great lifters. I had a lot of fun at Pro Raw 3, which was when I lifted in the open class against Dan Wright. Finished 20 kilos behind him. And
yeah, but that's you also weighed 40 kilos less than he did.
Like that.
That was a fun comp.
It was.
And so you've competed both Raw and Equipped.
Mm-hmm.
I'd imagine the vast majority of people watching this probably have never touched any powerlifting equipment or anything like that. I know the three of us have all competed equipped, some of us better than others. What do you think the biggest, like, did you get into lifting and go down the equipped road initially, or was that something you sort of fell into after your initial stint in powerlifting, and what pulled you away from equipped into raw lifting?
So at the time I started, there was only equipped lifting.
Yeah.
There was no raw. So in 2008, 2009, and 2010 when I was lifting equipped, there was no option for raw. So my first couple of comps, I did raw against equipped lifters. I think my third comp, I actually used knee wraps and that was it. I then just slowly brought in the bench shirt, the squat suit, and the deadlift suit following that. And what took me away from it was basically leaving the IPF. I don't think I'd still be lifting equipped even if I was in the IPF, mainly because it's just a pain in the ass.
Fucking
especially, I train solo, so...
Yeah. Nathan, for those of you that don't know, Nathan trains in a very large commercial gym on the other side of Canberra. I've trained with Nathan a few times at said commercial gym. Once for a really heavy equipped squat session where we spent a solid 10 minutes before either of us did a warm-up rep collecting all of the 20s that matched in the gym and putting them in a pile next to the rack so that we had enough plates.
That would fit on the bar.
That would fit. Were the sort of plates that connected, clipped into, and they were the only ones that would fit on the bar.
Yeah.
I've watched people in that gym like just stop and stare with their chin on the floor watching Nathan do it. And Nathan just goes about his business. That's just his thing.
The hardest thing, I think, for training solo, and you guys would probably attest to it, in equipment, is getting the stuff on and getting it off.
There's a story I'm sure you've told me about the time you had a panic attack getting stuck in a suit.
Yeah. So I was training squats, and it was the first time in a smaller competition squat suit.
Yeah.
So I got it on. Took about half an hour to get it on, sleeves, you know, someone briefing it, all that sort of good stuff. Did my squat.
Don't miss those days.
This is in the commercial
gym.
This is in a massive commercial gym that has like a pool and it's a commercial facility. It's not just a gym, it's this huge big place.
Yeah.
Like Olympic sized swimming pool, all that sort of stuff. Yeah. Like it's the whole kit.
So it was initially built with the swimming pool and an indoor sports facility. So if you can imagine the roof, you know, a million feet high. And
yeah, it's like massive. You can stand on like the tier and look down across the whole thing.
So I was in there over in the far corner.
In the one actual power rack.
In the one power rack in the gym at the time. Did my squat, got the straps off, and it was to about here where it starts to get tight.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
uh-oh,
this ain't coming off. And I was competing in a 44 size squat suit at the time. This was a 42. So it's significantly tight. First time I wore it.
Yeah, yeah.
I tried it on the backyard, had the same experience. So I got it to here and I'm trying to get it down. It's not coming. The guy comes over that I knew, can I help you? Yeah, right. And he's pulling on it and it's not moving. And all of a sudden I'm thinking, I'm not getting out of this thing. And so I bend over and grab the straps and start pulling like this. So blood's going to my head, which is not there anyway. Oxygen's not getting in, and all of a sudden I'm like, and I'll sit down, calm down. And then, I stuck my leg and he reefed it off, but it was a good 15, 20 minutes getting it off.
That's not a nice experience.
No, not at all.
And even if you're not a particularly claustrophobic person, being so confined in something like that, and just having that moment of like, fuck, is this my life now? Am I going to have to get someone with a really sharp pair of scissors to cut me out of this brand new suit?
That was the next step, to get scissors
and start cutting it.
Yeah.
Which happens. Like, yeah. I've heard of people having to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty sure the Russians do one attempt in their suit and then get a new one.
Yeah.
And go from there. It'd be handy to have sponsors from them.
Yeah, very handy.
Yeah.
It does become a very expensive game when you start using single use squat suits.
Yeah. Or custom bench shirts.
Yes.
So one thing I want to touch on, you know, you've been in powerlifting, you said, from 2008, yep. 2009, so it's coming on 10 years, yep. which is a similar journey that both John and myself have had. I've been in it for 10 years. I first heard about you at 2013 Nationals,
mm-hmm.
Where I didn't know your name. I just knew Marcus kept raving about this guy, which is where the cool soft guy thing came from. And I'm pretty sure at that meet you were pretty beat up. Something had happened in that prep.
Yeah.
I think you'd been pretty sick, or you'd lost a heap of weight, or got injured.
Yeah.
But you came in and you fucking killed it anyway. And then I've only seen you at big meets, and every time you come, you put up a massive performance despite all these injuries that have kind of happened along the way, and that's been happening for a number of years. So I guess what I'm asking you to help explain to everyone is what's kept you going along the way.
I just like lifting heavy shit.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, and it's funny, I was thinking back when I was after my recent injury, when I started back at the gym. Was 3 months later, I was lifting light weights, you know, trying to get the muscle.
Just to
practice.
Clarify, can you talk us through what your recent injury was?
Yeah, but or before that, when we say Nathan's had injuries, it's not like the regular powerlifter that's had, yeah, I'm suffering with injuries, I had a 13 millimeter tear in my quad. These are like the career ending injuries for most people that you've come back from and kept going.
Yeah, I think coming back from an injury is getting back to training at the right time.
Uh-huh.
Not letting that scar tissue develop, getting some weight in it, trying to get movement back in it as soon as you physically can.
Yeah.
And again, it's got to be, I think there's a narrow window where it's either too soon or too late.
Yeah.
And I think I've just got it every time right in that spot.
So sorry to cut John off, if you don't mind explaining your most recent one.
Yeah, so that was at Pro Raw 9 down in Melbourne in March, where I squatted and didn't stand up. Basically, I tore the top of my patella and quadricep tendon off in the hole, and that was it. Yeah, just a big tear and a big pop. So, going through the movement, thinking about it, was everything felt great. There was nothing sore or anything like that. And even said to John, "I feel really good." He wrapped me up, went out, felt fine. Got down into the hole, went to power up, and I felt my VMO tear, my lateralis tear, and then just the tendon went pop. And I think people have told me they were sitting four rows back and they heard it.
Yeah,
I definitely heard. I was standing on the side because I'd wrapped Nathan's knees for that squat, and I was standing on the side of the platform and I fucking heard it.
Yeah.
And I watched people all around like come in, and I stood there like I was almost in shock.
Yeah.
Like I just couldn't do anything. I was like, I stood there. I've still got my phone. Like the recording, I think, is actually on my phone. And the recording of that squat's like 6.5 minutes long because
it was a grinder.
No, so so Benny was sitting in the front row filming.
Well, he said he was closer than the front row.
Yeah, he was like lying in the front row filming, and then you hit the deck, and he just put the phone in his pocket and got up to help. So it was like a 6-minute video of Benny's pocket and the sound around him going on, and everything that happened after that.
Yeah. So at the time, I thought I'd done both legs because the VMO on my left tore as well.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it turns out it didn't pop, which was, I was glad. I wouldn't be able to drive home the next day.
Yeah, Nathan also drove home from Melbourne.
To Canberra.
Yeah, the next day.
Because I could extend my leg, but I couldn't retract it, so the
you could only accelerate.
Yeah.
It's like the car that couldn't slow down.
The hardest bit was getting into the car, or getting in and out of the car, because I couldn't bend it, so I had to pull the seat back, slide right across through the door, into the passenger seat, swing it around. I hope my police are watching that. Swing my leg in, and then I was fine to accelerate and brake and on cruise control. And then the hard bit was stopping to get petrol, because I had to get out of the car. And my mate at the time got me crutches out from the meet, and I still had them, so they're stopped properly now. It was
such a badass.
Yeah,
I know. Bad to bone. So when that happens, like you're in the moment, you feel everything go, you go down. What happens in your head? Are you kind of like, well, this has gone bad, but I'm still okay, I'm alive.
Yeah.
You know, and then is it you just kind of resigned to the fact that this has just happened and you're pretty chill about the whole situation? Because from what I know of you as a person, you're very relaxed.
Yeah, yeah.
Was there any sort of shit moment?
Initially when I thought both are gone, I thought this is bad. But after Jordan said, you know, the left one feels okay, you can bend it, can wiggle your toes, that sort of stuff, but I can't feel the tendon in the right one, so I thought, well, what are we going to do now? Just enjoy the rest of the comp. Think about...
Yeah, every time I asked Nathan if I could get him anything, his only answer was whiskey.
Yeah, you never did.
I never did.
It's not like you had come through with the goods, either.
No, I know.
Yeah, but sorry. Yeah, I just was, you know, accepting the fact that...
Got
I
wasn't whiskey out there, we can make up for it.
Too easy. Wasn't going to be able to finish the comp, which this is my first DNF in 10 years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I just enjoyed the rest of the comp. You know, it was not much you could do about it.
Yeah.
And the mate I was with, he's from Victoria, his sister-in-law is a physio, and he rang her and said, you know, we're going to be able to get in to get Nath looked at. And she sort of said, well, no, you're just going to sit there in emergency. They're going to say, go and see your doctor tomorrow, because there's not much they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it wasn't...
So instead he drove home.
Yeah, well, the next day, I gave myself a rest.
And then how long between getting home and into surgery was it?
So I was into surgery on the following Wednesday. Yeah, so I went...
That was on a Sunday, was it?
Saturday did it, yeah. So I drove back to Canberra, went into a walk-in clinic here. They said, it doesn't look good. We're not going to be able to do anything for you, though. Go to emergency. So I went to emergency. They x-rayed it, and the doctor at the time said, this is what I think has happened, but we'll go and see the registrar tomorrow for confirmation. And you could actually, when he showed me the x-ray, you could see where the top of the patella was halfway up my leg.
Because it snapped off with it?
Because it snapped off with the tendon. And he said, this is where that bit of that shade there is actually bone. That should be down here where that little chip is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up there, and this is what I think has happened, but the registrar will be able to confirm tomorrow, which was the Monday. And I got a call on the Tuesday from the hospital, and they said, come in tomorrow for surgery. And I went in, and yeah, happy days.
Mm-hmm. And how long between the surgery to your first lift?
So that was first real lift or first
with the
back
bar.
Into the
squat, squat with the bar?
3 months, yeah. Yeah, so it was, the recovery was, I had my leg straight for 2 weeks, and then every 2 weeks I could put 15 degrees of bend in it, and that when it got to 90 degrees I went in and saw the surgeon again. He said, get rid of the brace, start getting some mobility into it, movement into it, don't squat on it. Of course I listened to that. but it's just a confidence. Admittedly I squatted a little bit with the brace on still, just to still get the heavy weight on my back, just not lose the feeling of having that on your back.
You're so a fucking nutcase.
I did it with safety pins and stuff. I didn't have Spiros, so couldn't fly nothing.
So you're just doing high pin squats just to...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, only up to 280.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like, yeah.
Yeah. But they're only, you know, that far. And then I was doing squats lighter just to the range of the brace. And then when the brace came off, I was trying to squat to depth with the bar and just couldn't get there for about 2 or 3 weeks. And it was just, the problem with it was they've tied, if you think of your knee, they've actually taken the VMO and tied it over here.
Okay.
To support the tendon.
Yes.
And now, so my VMO, instead of going up this way, goes across like that. And there's a lot of restriction there. Like, on top of my knee is all muscle. Above my knee is all muscle now, where it shouldn't be. So they tied all that in onto the tendon to make it stronger. I said, I should have done the other side while we were at it.
Some sort of 2-for-1 deal,
yeah,
there.
That's right.
You're under anyway, your
yeah,
size,
yeah.
Like it's that's the expensive portion,
yeah,
of the surgery.
That's right.
Putting you under,
yeah,
you know, as well.
But yeah, it was just a matter of slowly getting back into the proper squat position.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't do it with body weight to start with.
Yeah.
But now it's coming on.
And so, like, on that front, obviously, there's going to be, or for most normal people, and I don't know whether you fall into this particular zone or not, for most normal people, tearing your patella in half while squatting would probably be enough to stop you squatting again. Mostly through fear, which I think is probably reasonable. what sort of went through your head when you first got back under the bar? Was there an element of like, oh fuck, I'm a bit like tentative about that? Have you had to go through any of that? What are you feeling now that you're back to actually squatting some weight again?
Every time I squat, it's always in the back of my mind. It's not as much now. Like it's a lot of a mental game at the moment. Especially when I first started a couple of months ago, it was like, I don't think I'm going to be able to get to comp depth again. And that was my first goal, just to get to comp depth without the bar.
Yeah.
And once I got there, it was like, okay, let's get the bar and let's do it with the bar. Then it was with the plate each side, and just slowly building up. And every time I'm doing a session, I'm getting more confident. And I used to, you know, try and power out of the hole. I have strength, but not power. So if I try and jump, I can't jump.
Yeah.
Because I just don't have that explosive power through that leg. I can hop on my left and jump off my left, but right is no good.
Yeah.
At the moment. And that's something I want to work on. I want to just work on getting that power and that confidence of explosiveness through that leg again. And when I squat, I'm obviously favouring my left.
Yeah.
I sort of just go up, and even deadlifts. I watch myself and I'd come down and tap off this way because that leg, the left leg,
has more power there.
Heaps more power. And it's just time, you know. Every time you squat, if you think, is it going to happen again, you won't squat again.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just ignore it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when you first, you mentioned that when you first get under it, you know, you are thinking about it a little bit and now you've learned to ignore it. When you first start thinking about it, does it supersede what's happened in the past before? Because I know you broke a collarbone.
Subluxation to the sternocleidocaphalic joint.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're doing a squat. Walking out of squat, right?
No, I was at the top of the squat.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you did
the squat. I remember hearing
it.
Yeah.
It's on YouTube, and you see the squat, then you hear a, and you go like that, and then about 3 seconds later, the crowd clap. But yeah, it was just at the start when I watched it, I thought, who's clapping before I've finished? And then I thought, well, hang on, that's when I felt that pain. Oh, it must have been the sound of the sternoclavicular joint. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've also watched you in here, like, tear an adductor in the middle of a squat.
Mm-hmm.
So clearly at this point, you've had a few squatting related injuries. Now, I don't know about the rest of the world, but I think the squat's probably the one that takes the most mental commitment, right? Because it's of the three big lifts, it's the one where shit can really go bad.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of confidence, I think. And I always try and teach, you know, squatting with confidence and that sort of thing. How has this series of recurring injuries affected your confidence in that?
The first couple, like the sternoclavicular joint and the adductor, didn't affect me confidence-wise at all.
Yeah.
But this one in particular, because of having to go through surgery, then the recovery, and I guess the toll it sort of took on the family, with me not being able to do jack shit.
Because you do it, you've got two little kids.
Yeah, So my wife had to drive me around, basically. It was lucky I was working from home at the time, because I couldn't drive. You know, just being involved with the family and that sort of thing, and the kids seeing me, you know, Mr. Daddy, Indestructible Daddy.
Didn't you also roll the shit out of your ankles skateboarding with your children once?
Yeah. No, that was at soccer.
Oh, yeah.
I tore my calf on the skateboard, and before the 2013, that's why I'd lost a lot of weight, because I'd fallen off my skateboard and fell over the dog, actually, and fractured my wrist. Yeah, so, and I knew I wasn't going to be competitive in the 110s, so I cut into the 100s to be competitive. I mean, that's one of my goals, is to be as competitive as I can, regardless of what weight class I'm in.
Yeah.
So there's a big question that I had. I coach at a lot of competitions. I see a lot of different personas in the warm-up room. You know, some high-level lifters are less friendly on competition
day. I think the word you're looking for is dickheads.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. You know, everyone loves seeing you at the comps because you're a lot of fun. You're very relaxed. You know when to turn on and when to turn off. And I think you're pretty unique in that. Do you think, is that just born of who you are? Is there any strategy in that?
I think it's just who I am. Like, the hardest bit is the training, right? So you do your 12-week training cycle, however long the cycle is, I go to a comp to have fun. I'm there with people who've gone through the same pains as me. They've done similar training, like everyone's going there off the back of a crappy cycle or a small injury or sometimes the best cycle they've ever done. But when it gets to the platform, all that doesn't matter because you don't know what's going to happen on the day. So I just go there to have fun and relax. The serious stuff's in the gym, you know, getting out your sessions, getting through your sessions. You get to week 5, 6 in a cycle and you know, I can't be fucking this anymore, it's just a pain in the ass. And then at the comp day, everyone there is in the same boat as you, everyone's like-minded, they're all there to achieve something. So I just chill out, try and cheer everyone on, you know, just have fun. And that's my persona, having fun. Even on the footy field, I'd want to have fun. I played a lot of Aussie rules growing up, and training was always very serious. The game was serious, but I'd just be out there having fun with my mates. Yeah.
I think that, so there's, like I use you as an example for comp, the way you should behave at a comp all the time. And there's two really distinct examples that I have. I've had the pleasure of handling you at several big meets. The first one was GPA Worlds in 2014 in Sydney. I drove up to Sydney to handle Nathan for the day. Was it your third squat that dude took a stack, or was it your second squat?
Third squat.
Yeah, so we come out, Nathan's third squat. I've wrapped probably the tightest pair of knee wraps I've ever wrapped in my life. I like dripping in sweat with a forearm pump just wrapping Nathan's knees. And we get up there and Nathan's standing, like, I think you were two lifters out?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we'd got up with the intention, like, you were ready to go, the next lifter was going to go, and you were on the platform, sweet. The guy in front of you, or was it got two lifters in front of you?
I think it was a guy in front of me.
Yeah, so the guy in front of you unracked his squat, like, took a stack halfway down, like, bashed his shin into the mono, the bar hit the floor, so they had to strip the bar, put the bar back in the wrap, get this dude who clearly couldn't walk at that point, was bleeding everywhere off the platform. Now, if you've ever worn knee wraps before, you'll know they're fucking unpleasant at the best of times and not something you want to spend a lot of time in because they do cut the circulation off, things like that. Now, I've seen plenty of lifters who spend like a fraction of a second too long in their wraps and they start to panic.
Yeah.
And the best response I got from you stood there calm as anything. It didn't change your demeanor at all. At one point, you turned around and said, oh, can you just massage my calves a bit? And so I, you know, rubbed Nathan's calves. That was fun. And you still went up and you squatted and it was a good lift.
Yeah.
And I think there are very few, if any, lifters in the country who could do that as well as you did.
Mm.
Most would panic in some way or another, want to rush through their process, want to struggle with things, like just try and get through it rather than thriving in that position. I use that one as an example all the time. I think that's a really impressive example of someone who can maintain their composure under pressure, because powerlifting's pretty controllable, I think, in many ways. Like, it's a fairly safe sport. You know what's going to happen to a certain extent. Like, you know what the weights are going to feel like. Often you've touched those weights in training, so you know what to expect. And I think the mark of any good athlete, regardless of the sport, is someone who reacts well under pressure like that and under circumstances that are beyond their control.
Mm.
I think the way you handled yourself on that day was perfect. And I think the other big one I use is actually at Pro Raw this year, when I've got a photo somewhere of Will pulling 375 for the win. And like, at that point, the 110s would have been you, Orib, and Will, and at that point Will had it won, and there's a photo I've got of Will at the top of the deadlift with you on the side of the platform on crutches, you know, unable to walk properly, screaming at him from the side. And I think it's one of the reasons I love powerlifting and will always love powerlifting, is it's one of the few sports where it doesn't actually matter what the competition is or who you're competing against. The really great thing is that everyone wants you to do well.
Yeah, that's right.
And ultimately, in what is a very individual sport, when you get on that platform, the whole room is rooting for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Regardless of who's winning, who's not winning.
Yeah.
And I think there are certainly an element of powerlifters in Australia and the world that in your circumstance, injured, can't finish the meet, they would have just left.
Mm-hmm.
And not stayed to support their friends, not done any of that because that's not how they do it. But I think that's, for me, is the epitome of professionalism in the sport, right? You're up there cracking dick jokes before the attempts, all those sort of things. Like, I thoroughly enjoy handling you at comps because we have a lot of fun doing
it.
It's a fun, like, there's a lot of banter going on all day.
Mm.
all that sort of stuff. But when it's serious, it's serious.
Yeah.
But it only has to be serious for that really short portion of time.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people could learn a lot from that.
Mm.
There are a lot of dick jokes when you're around.
It's a room full of men.
Yeah.
And it's many years in the Navy.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I was just going to say, you know, carrying on from what John just said about your composure at competitions, I think, you know, for me, with powerlifting being such an individual sport, at times, there's a lot of room for arrogance, but being such a close community, there's not really a lot of room for arrogance.
No.
And I think, you know, one of the things that really stands out to me is that you're a great sportsman. Like, we have, at my gym, Will trains at my gym, we have a trophy that was given to you, mm-hmm. that you gave to Will,
mm-hmm.
Based on tying at Pro Raw 8. And you gave him the trophy because...
He got the last deadlift.
He got the last deadlift.
Yeah.
So you felt, because it was tied, right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was tied.
So it was tied.
So I won on body weight, and I don't like to win on body weight.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Will, I think he had a 9-for-9 day.
Yes.
And I had probably another crappy day. And yeah, Will's very deserving of that trophy.
Yeah.
I think that's fairly unique in a sport.
Definitely.
Like powerlifting.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's really cool.
I think that's really all we wanted to talk about. Does that cover everything? Do you have any other questions?
No, I think that's
good. Do you have anything you want to say, Nathan?
No. I just like to thank everyone for the support after my injury. I get a lot of texts, you know, every couple of weeks. How you going? What's going on? Blah, blah, blah.
I get a question every big comp I go, how's Nathan?
Yeah.
What's Nathan doing? How's it going? When's he coming back?
I will be back at Pro Raw 10. I'm not expecting to be competitive, but I will be competing. That's awesome. Yeah. So it'll be my 10th in a row. I think it's a bit of a milestone. I've been there from the first one. 10 later, it's still going, getting bigger and better.
Mm.
And
it's grown a lot since Pro Raw 1.
Oh yeah, it has. It has.
I remember attending Pro Raw 1 in the Frankston Dolphins Footy Club.
Yeah.
It was a day I got absolutely slaughtered by Glenn in the Super Heavies.
Yeah.
Beat me by like 300 kilos, I think.
Yeah, small margin.
Yeah, just a little bit. Snuck in there.
If you just in closing, if you had to give one piece of advice to lifters who are watching this and you know, looking up to you as a very accomplished person in Australian powerlifting, what would that one piece of advice be?
Don't be in a rush. Like, I've been in the game 10 years. I want to be in the game another 10 years. Don't try and be an overnight sensation, because you'll end up getting messed up. Take your time. Don't be in a rush. Yeah, that's about it.
Awesome.
I think that's a pretty good point to finish on.
Yeah.
Normally we like to talk about where can people find you to follow your stuff, but people can't find you anywhere.
No. Oh, I'm on YouTube in places, but
consistently. Nathan's an excellent lurker. Sometimes Nathan and I will have a conversation about something that's happened on Facebook that clearly Nathan has read, but he's there. He's like just that idea of a person that sort of floats around, so you might find him, you might not. Otherwise, come to Pro Raw 10 in Melbourne.
Supposed to be pretty big, apparently.
Should be a good time.
Excellent. Thank you for taking the time to join us today. And we'll see you guys next time.
Pleasure, guys. Catch you later.